isn't anything particular. You know, if you read about an unknown disease that killed 80,000 Americans, you'd be demanding some kind of cure. So, you know, it may end up being not that much to us, hopefully, if we're very fortunate. It may burn itself out mostly in Asia. You don't know. The problem is, unfortunately, at this point, it could go either way. Now, we talked last week about vaccinations, and they think that they might be able to develop something that might be testable in 3 months. And then, if it works, they would then have to ramp up manufacture. In addition, there are antivirals out there that have never been tested on coronaviruses. There were some antivirals that were tried with Ebola. The good finding was that it didn't hurt anyone. It didn't damage them. The bad was that it didn't do anything to the Ebola. But Ebola is very different than a coronavirus, so the Chinese are going to start using this antiviral material. It has to be given intravenously. It's not a little pill or anything, so it's a hospital-based treatment plan. And we'll find out how that goes. So there's a lot of variables out there, and keep your fingers crossed and hope for the best. Anyway, this is our new shortened version of the Technical Met. So as always, I would like to thank everyone who participated tonight and remind them that the stories and the quadrifilal filer balun winding and other stuff will be available on my link site, roy.ac2gs.com. And if you have any topic questions, if you have any mailbag questions for Dick, if you have any questions you would like me to relay to Paul, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. So thanks a lot, and I will pass it over to Paul for the space report.
AC2GS, WS2N, very good, Roy. And good information. And keep away from sick people. That's all I'm going to do. The mask, I was in Ace Hardware, they were all sold out. The guy behind the counter said that somebody came in and ordered 5,000 of them, so, you know, I think the panic is already going on. So you might not even be able to get these masks of any kind. Maybe the N95s or any of them. That's the way it looks. Anyway, let me bring you up to date on the latest launch. It was supposed to go up today. This was supposed to go up at 5:39 this afternoon, so I watched the NASA website, and I waited for Antares to launch. Antares is the rocket that Northrop Grumman now builds, and it launches from Virginia, a place called Wallops Island. And it was the 13th cargo mission that was supposed to go up to the International Space Station in the Cygnus cargo vehicle. They were going to bring up almost 8,000 pounds of equipment and supplies for right now three astronauts that are left on the space station. So they got down to T-minus zero, almost about 3 minutes away, and they aborted the mission. And it's not due to the rocket itself, not Antares, but apparently some ground support equipment. They got some kind of readings, I think, on the fuel lines. I'm not sure. And they will reschedule that launch. But it would have been nice, you know, to see that go up. And if it was a clear day, you would have been able to see it, especially at the time it was going up at 5:39. It was just starting to get dark. We could have probably seen it from Long Island. Or in the city. People going up to the high buildings. You know, you go up to the Empire State Building and you look to the south or southwest. and you'd be able to see it. You know, you're not really watching the reflection from the sun, but you're actually looking at the two engines producing 800,000 pounds, or almost a million pounds of thrust with the two RD-181 engines. So we'll see what happens, see if that is able to take off maybe within a few days or another week or so. Let me drop it. And NASA was supposed to have two rockets go up today, and the other one is still scheduled for tonight, actually right at the end of this net. This net officially is going to end at 11 o'clock, so it turns out 11:03, you'd get to see another launch if you brought up the NASA website. They'll be showing the launch of the Solar Orbiter. The Solar Orbiter is going to orbit the sun, and it's going to go closer than the planet Mercury over time. And it's built by European Space Agency, and it's being launched by an American rocket, an Atlas V, from Launch Complex 41 down in Cape Canaveral. And then you wonder why is NASA showing it on their TV? It's always NASA has something to do with it. And sure enough, they have at least one instrument on board that's one out of ten that belongs to NASA, so therefore it becomes partially a NASA flight, and they'll have it on their website when they show this launch. And people have spent years trying to get this thing together, getting it ready, sent over from Europe to the United States, been tested, and ready to go. And it's a little different than the Parker probe that was launched last year. Parker probe was pretty much an all NASA mission, and that went into an orbit even closer, much closer to the sun than this one is going to go. This solar orbit, I think, will get as close as 0.4 AU, around 20. Million miles away from the sun, something like that. And that goes into a very tight orbit, and then it elongates all the way out to around Venus and over and over again. But it's on the equator, the equatorial plane, you know, similar to the way the planets rotate around the sun. And this one is a little different. It's going to get into almost, not quite, but almost a polar orbit of the sun. Again, it will go in very close, inside the orbit of Venus, inside the orbit of Mercury. Mercury is like 35 or 36 million miles away from the sun, so this will get into around 30 or so, a little bit less, and it will get hot, you know, so this thing's got a heat shield on it. It will pass, every time it passes Venus, though, it will change its inclination, and each year that goes by, the inclination will get higher and higher, and eventually it'll be going up near the poles, you know, 30, 40 degrees off the ecliptic plane, and then it will be able to take readings from the North Pole and the South Pole of the Sun, which they really have never had. They've gotten some readings from the Ulysses that was launched back in 1990. That one went out to Jupiter to change its inclination, and then it would go over the north and south pole of the sun. That one didn't have any cameras on it, it just had instrumentation. This one actually has cameras on it. So it's got this heat shield, like I was saying before, 10 foot by 8 foot square heat shield that will always face the sun, and the spacecraft is behind it. And the heat shield is about 15 inches thick. It's got this titanium foil in the front to reflect the heat, and it's got this void and then, you know, other different insulation, and eventually it gets down to the air, to the main plate, and each insulator is being held like with pointy titanium sticks, you know, separating it. This way there's no heat transfer from the titanium sheets all the way back into the, you know, where the spacecraft actually is. So it's going to stay very cold, probably around 80 degrees if you were on that spacecraft, but 900 degrees if you're in front of the heat shield. So that's going to be it. The solar probe will go up tonight. They've had news conferences about it. I watched a couple of news conferences, and they have all the scientists on. And these guys spent many, many years developing all these instruments, and they're going to be anxious to see this thing successfully launch. So at 11:03 when we go off, I'll put that on. If anybody wants to watch it, I'll still leave the radio on. If anybody had any questions for the solar probe that will be launched at 11:03 tonight, Eastern Standard Time. Okay, let me just pause, see if anybody has any questions. Okay, so that would have been the second flight of the day. Unfortunately, the first one didn't work out. But they've had scrubs before. The next couple of days, I think it's going to be, the weather's going to be a problem. It's definitely going to cause a constraint for launch in Virginia, but not down in Florida. So Florida looks good for tonight. Another important milestone was reached today. A couple of days ago was the return of Christina Cook from the International Space Station. She flew back on the Soyuz spacecraft and landed in Kazakhstan. Successful flight all the way back from the space station. She had a Russian commander on board, and Luca Pometano, he was the European Space Agency astronaut that was up there, and they did many spacewalks together. She did 6 spacewalks, 3 of which was with another woman who's still on the space station called Jessica Meir. And the reason it's important that Christina Cook got back is she was almost up there for a year, 11 months, and I think about 2 weeks short of beating Scott Kelly's record. Scott Kelly spent almost a year up in space himself, and then she blew all the records away for most people, including all women. She now has the record for the most consecutive days in space, and it's good that she made it back, and there'll be a news conference with her on Wednesday. She'll be at NASA, and to be able to speak to her. Spacecraft came down successfully, deorbited, hit the atmosphere around 62 miles up. The front part of the spacecraft and the back part separate. The front part's called the orbital module, and the back part is the service module, and that leaves the descent module with the 3 people on board. And as it comes down through the atmosphere, it starts transmitting a beacon, and it's CW, and you hear AN, you know, you hear da-da, 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 every now and then, da-da, da-da, and you know that, well, you know it's okay long before you actually see a parachute open. But they landed in a foot of snow in Kazakhstan. They bundled them all up and sent them home to their respected homes. This is WS2N. Any questions or comments? Okay. before Christina, Peggy Whetson was probably the most famous woman astronaut for spending time in space. But she says she's very happy that she broke her record, and this one says the same thing. She hopes somebody else breaks her record as well. But it won't be for a while, because now they have three people on board the space station. They will be sending three more up very soon, and then, you know, what's going to happen is the three that are up, they're going to come back in April. And that will just leave three on board, two Russians and one American. Only one American, Chris Cassidy, and he will only have one NASA astronaut. So the time dedicated to science is going to drop. You know, these astronauts are not only doing science experiments on the space station, but they're dedicating a lot of time to maintaining the space station. So the actual time, instead of like 40 hours of science time, dedicated to actually doing science, and that's the idea of having the space station up there, it's going to drop down to around 5 hours. So that's not good, and that will stay like that for quite some time. You know, I'm going to guess it could happen, you know, that this could last not only about 3 months, but maybe 6 months, depending on the launch capabilities of NASA. NASA didn't want to buy any more seats on the Soyuz spacecraft, so it's pretty much over after Cassidy goes up in about a month. They're thinking about buying another seat for insurance purposes in case both of the planned American spacecraft that are supposed to be going to the space station don't work out, and that would be the Dragon crew vehicle or the Starliner by Boeing. And right now it looks like the Dragon crew vehicle has the leg up. They might be the ones that probably will launch first, because Boeing has now got more problems with the Starliner. About a month ago, actually the end of December, Starliner launched a crew vehicle with no crew, and the idea was to dock with the International Space Station. It was supposed to stay there for a while, 5-6 days, and then undock and fly back to White Sands, New Mexico, and land on ground. They got the vehicle up there okay, and then they brought it back okay, but it never made it to the space station. The reason it didn't is because when it went up, there was something wrong with their software for their timer on board the space station. It didn't match on board the space vehicle. It didn't match the Atlas rocket that put it up there. And it was around 11 hours off, so after separating the booster of the Atlas V, which has the Russian 180 engine attached to it, that booster separates, and that leaves the Castor 30 XL, the XL rocket to put it into orbit. Then that thing separates from the crew vehicle, and that leaves the service module and the crew vehicle in space. All the thrusters were going wild there because the timing was all off because of the software. So they did an investigation after this thing finally got back. You know, they couldn't make it to the space station, so they deorbited and came back and landed in White Sands, New Mexico, where they're supposed to, on these airbags. But as they did an investigation about the timer, they found other software problems, at least two other problems. One of them could cause a catastrophic accident. So if you had a crew on board, and that this other one that they found in the software, they found the coding was all wrong. It could have separated the service module from the crew vehicle, and it could have made it where the service module, you know, had thrusters on it as well. It's an independent space craft at that time. Could have actually flown back and crashed into the crew vehicle. So now they have to investigate all these software problems. And this is Boeing. Now, where have I heard this before? With software problems with Boeing. You know, I'm starting to wonder if there's a connection with who makes up these the software stuff, you know, from Boeing. It's the same people that make up the software for the airplanes, you know, I don't know. But because of it, I think this thing could be delayed quite a bit. And then Bridenstine is the NASA administrator. He was thinking, well, maybe we could do this next launch with people. We did 95% of what we needed to do. We got off the ground. We flew through space, and then we came back and landed. The only thing we didn't do was go all the way up to the space station dock and come back. And that didn't sound like a good idea to me. And sure enough, now they're thinking about actually doing this all over again, a complete do-over. Take another vehicle, another spacecraft, manned spacecraft, put it on top of another Atlas V rocket with two solid boosters like they did last time, and do it all over again until they get it up to the space station. But this could take months from now, and then after that they have to evaluate everything, and maybe they can get a crew to launch maybe by the end of the year. That's what I'm thinking. So I think SpaceX will probably, if they keep going the way they're going, they haven't had any problems lately. They seem to have worked out their explosion problems with the crew vehicle that happened last April. When they took that vehicle and put it on a test stand, this is the same vehicle that actually went to the International Space Station and came back. And they put it on a test stand, and they were testing the Super Draco engines. The Super Draco engines are the ones that they would usually use for an abort, and the whole thing blew up. And they realized that it's not a good idea to mix nitrogen tetroxide with the titanium check valve system that they had for the fuel. You know, you normally would mix the fuel with the nitrogen tetroxide, and you get a hypergolic reaction, and instantaneously, your thrusters would come to life. Well, in this case, because the oxygen level went too high past that titanium check valve, which check valves only allow things to go in one direction, the whole thing reacted and there wasn't much left of the crew vehicle after that test. SpaceX says that they fixed that problem. They don't no longer use any titanium check valves. They're using a blowout disc, or they call them burst discs, which I've seen before, on job sites. They're really two flanges put together with a disc in between. Yeah, usually have different colored discs, and different colored discs will react at different pressures, and they will actually, burst. And apparently, that's what they must have replaced on the Super Draco engines. Well, let me see if anybody has any questions or comments. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. Okay, I guess not. The Congress has come up with a new plan. This is the House of Representatives, a new plan to see if NASA will change their plans on going to the moon and going to Mars, the way they're going about it. First of all, the amount of money that they're getting, not really anywhere near what they need. NASA gets around $20 billion a year. And to do what they need to do, they need to increase that by about $4 or $5 billion. And from what I see, they really haven't gotten 10 cents more. And yet they're planning on changing everything. Go back 15 years ago, they had NASA had a plan back in the Bush administration to send people back to the moon. It was called the Constellation Project. Constellation Project consisted of launching people on solid booster rockets, essentially. They called the Ares 1. They were going to launch astronauts in this, and they were going to dock with another vehicle in orbit. And they would dock with that, and attached to that vehicle would be the Altair, lunar lander, which had the capability of putting four people on the surface of the moon. And they were going to fly to the moon, similar to what they did with Apollo, and go into orbit. And the only difference was they weren't going to leave anybody in the command module. The command module was going to be the Orion spacecraft, which is all still being built, the Orion spacecraft. But they canceled Altair pretty much altogether. And Altair was going to take all four people and not leave anybody in the orbit around the moon. It was going to go down, land on the moon, and they would do their experiments, and then they would take off, redock with Orion, and then fly all the way back and to Earth, and that was it. But now they've come up with this new idea called the Gateway System to put a space station in orbit around the moon, and not just 60 miles above the moon where you could do it. They want to put it like 40,000 miles away from the moon, and then come in close, maybe about 1,000 miles from the surface of the moon, and then go back out again in a highly elliptical orbit. And the reason they want to do that would be quite stable. They don't have to deal with all the mass concentration areas on the moon. Mass cons would tend to change the orbit if you were in a low orbit for a long period of time. And it would tend to use up more fuel correcting that orbit. While in this big, halo type of orbit that they're thinking about with the space station, it could be there on a permanent basis, and you could leave a crew in there all the time, and then we get resupply missions from the moon, from the Earth to the moon. And then to get down to the moon, they would have commercial vehicles that would be developed, and they would be permanently docked to the space station. So eventually you would have a launch from Earth of a crew on an Orion spacecraft, launch on an SLS system, space launch system, massive rocket with 10 million pounds of thrust. And you would launch these people all the way to the moon, and they would dock with the Gateway system, the space station that's going around. Spend some time on the space station, so you say hello to the people that are permanently there, and then they would get into the lander. And the lander, there were two versions of the lander, but one of them, they would have a transfer vehicle. They would transfer your orbit from 40,000 mile elliptical orbit all the way down to a 60 mile orbit above the moon, and then another vehicle you would get in at that point, and that vehicle would land you on the moon. And then you would be able to land on, say, the south part of the moon, and maybe start to build some kind of lunar base there. And then that would be the end result. You now have a lunar base. When it's time for that crew to leave, they would launch from the moon, dock with the transfer vehicle at 60 miles above the Earth, above the moon, and then that transit vehicle would ignite its engines and go back out to this 40,000-mile distance from the moon and redock with the permanent space station called Gateway. From there, you would get into your Orion spacecraft, still dock to the Gateway, and fly all the way back to Earth, and then have your parachutes open up and land in the Pacific Ocean. So all this would, it's actually technically possible, but it's not financially possible. There's no way they're going to do it with the money that they're dealing with. The plan was originally, before this administration got into office, because they had already done away with the Constellation program and Altair. was, you know, initially they wanted to just go to Mars. That was the plan, to go to Mars. So then they changed slightly. They said, okay, we'll keep this gateway system going. The new advice is to, well, we could keep the gateway system and, you know, maybe eventually use that to, you know, as a stepping stone to go to Mars, but we don't need to go to the moon and dig up all the regolith and try to create oxygen and create fuel from the frozen water that's in the craters. We don't need to do that anymore. Let's do it the other way, you know. And then let's do away with all these commercial vehicles that are attached to the space station. Congress wants to let's own the vehicle. If we're going to land on the moon, let NASA own it. And let's concentrate more on going to Mars, and let's be the first ones to go to Mars. You know, so far, most of that idea I tend to agree with now, but the problem is all the scientists don't. They're all writing in letters. Scientists are writing in letters and letting NASA know that, you know, they disagree with this. They want to keep the system that they had. It's a complicated system, but there's no way to pay for it, from what I see. So unless they could magically find money, which I'm sure they could probably get it out of the Defense Department, you know, they think nothing of doing things like that nowadays. Just take it out of the military. We need a couple billion here, a billion there. We could do it. So I'll keep you updated on it. We'll find out as time goes on what final system that they decide on. You know, what I care about is when they're going to be able to do this. The old system was landing on the moon by 2028. This administration wants to do it by 2024. With all this complicated systems of gateways, transfer vehicles, and so on. And they think they're going to push this up to 2024. Well, now Congress is basically telling, you know, you're not going to get any more money, and, you know, you might as well go back to 2028, which is my earliest guess of when anything like that would happen. Now, everybody's forgetting about Elon Musk and SpaceX. He's going nuts. He's building like there's no tomorrow. There's no restraints on him. You know, it's not a public company, so he doesn't have to worry about people voting and saying, you know, parts of the company saying, well, you know, what you're doing is not reasonable. It's all his money. And he's spending a fortune on building the Starship. The Starship is under construction. He's already had some technical problems where things blew up on him, and he's changing the whole design of the Starship. Starship is his newest rocket that he plans on building. Right now, he had two being built at the same time, one down in Boca Chica, Texas, and then the other one in Florida. And since the one failure, you know, he was building them identical. He did away with that whole design, and he changed to a different iteration. And he's now building one right now down in Boca Chica, Texas. And he plans on flying out within a couple of months just to see if he can get up 12 miles or so and then come back and land where it took off. The Starship is going to be completely reusable. And his idea is to get this thing to the point where you can launch it actually into orbit and bring it back. And then after that's done, he's going to be able to have his booster called he's calling it a heavy booster. So he wants to have, instead of seven of these engines that the Starship is going to have, he's going to have 35 engines attached to the booster, which is going to launch the Starship. And, you know, we're talking about a vehicle much wider than the Saturn V and probably the equal height to the Saturn V rocket. Instead of putting out 7.5 million pounds of thrust that Saturn V put out. This thing's going to put out, you know, 13 or 14 million pounds of thrust. With that, he thinks he can go to the moon, he can land on the moon, and come back. With this whole system, eventually, he plans on going to Mars. He still thinks he could get there by, you know, 2029, something like that. Maybe into orbit around Mars. NASA's hoping to put a base on the moon. But this new proposal by the House Science Committee, which passed a couple of different committees, so it's actually, you know, working its way through Congress, is to change to 2028 for landing on the moon, but putting people in orbit, not landing, but putting people in orbit around Mars in 2033. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions, put in that. Okay, last week Dick was interested in the tourist situation with what Russia was doing, and they really slowed down on that. But starting in 2002, I told you last week that Dennis Tito was the first guy to go up, and there were, turns out, eight. I say there's nine because there was one flight after that recently that the United Arab Emirates put a guy on board, and they paid them to go up. So I consider it nine. But they say there's eight. There were eight flights that went up. Yeah, Dennis Tito. He's an American citizen. Is actually born in South Africa, that was the first to spend $25 million to go up to the space station for like 10 days and come back. And that was followed by Mark Shuttleworth. Oh, my correction. I think Dennis Tito was an American, I think. I'm trying to remember. Oh, whatever. Mark Shuttleworth was another guy. He was from South Africa. I know he was. And then you had Gregory Olson, Anchen Ansari, that was a woman. She went up there for about 10 days, came back, and that's where they got the Ansari Prize, $10 million to launch two vehicles into orbit, to launch one vehicle into orbit and bring it back, and then launch another one within 10 days. That was one of the prizes, and to do a suborbital flight was prize that was won by Burt Rutan when he built Spaceship One, and then that the two suborbital flights. I forget how many millions of dollars they got, but that was from Ansari. She was involved in that. But again, these are all $20-30 million flights that these people took. Charles Simony. He was born in Hungary. He was one of the people that was first involved with Microsoft years ago. And he became like a super billionaire. And he wound up being one of the paying tourists that went up to the space station. And another guy we like, which was Richard Garriott. Richard Garriott was the son of Owen Garriott. Owen just died recently, but Owen was a ham, and so was Richard Garriott. Richard Garriott had a call sign, W5KWQ, still does have that call sign. He was a big amateur radio fan, made many contacts while he was in space on the Ares program, as well as a guy, Lale Bray, I think his name was. He was a guy from Circus Olay. He was the last guy to go up, but the one guy from Hungary, he went up twice, so that's why there's only seven people here, and yet there were eight flights to the space station. The guy liked it so much, he went up again. So I don't know if he got a discount or not, but he, collectively, he probably spent like $50 million on his two flights. If you were to do it again, the price has gone up over the last 10 years. This stopped all back in 2007 or so. I think that was the last flight, 2008, something like that. Well, after, another 10 years, the price has gone to like $50 million. NASA pays $80 million for one seat for an astronaut to go up to the International Space Station, which is kind of ridiculous. But this is what they want. I'm sure SpaceX is probably going to charge, half that amount. So we're going to have two independent companies, Boeing and SpaceX, charging NASA. NASA will be a customer. And to go to the International Space Station, which will be good. Right now, Russia sends three people up at a time. NASA will be sending, once they get it going anyway, in the beginning, they'll start off with two or three, and that will eventually go up to four at a time, which will increase the science on the space station by a lot. Science right now is dropping down to around 5 hours a week, which is ridiculous. But once you have four people on board, that number will jump up to maybe, 50 hours, It's a tremendous difference. Even with one extra astronaut, they've always had six for the last I don't know how many years, but now they'll have seven. But as far as tourism, they kind of stopped that. This guy, was the Hungarian guy. He also had a Hungarian call letter. He would have liked to have gone up more, but he went up twice. But they put a halt on that program, which is unusual. Russia will take money for anything. NASA wanted to do it many years ago, but then they got away from it after all the disasters that they had with, especially at the Columbia and an STS-107, Challenger first and then Columbia with STS-107. So I don't think you're going to see any NASA flights going on, up. NASA's not going to let anybody go up at all. You might see it from a private company like SpaceX or Boeing, but it won't be approved by NASA. Similar to what they do now. They go up to the International Space Station on a Russian flight. NASA can't say no. It belongs to 21 different countries. I think 19 companies, 19 countries with the European Space Agency plus NASA and Roscosmos for Russia. This is WS2N. Any other comments? Okay, another launch that occurred last week was by a company called OneWeb. OneWeb launched 32 satellites in one shot on a Soyuz rocket from Russia. And why 32 satellites? It was to put into orbit and start another broadband system. 34, I think they're going with 34 per shot, and they plan on launching maybe 600 of these satellites eventually. And they think they could do a complete system, a complete internet system with 600 satellites. And SpaceX is trying to do it, and they need a minimum of 1,200 satellites. I haven't figured out why there's a discrepancy there. And then SpaceX will eventually put up thousands more. They have plans of putting up at least 30,000 satellites over time. And SpaceX launches them at, they're around 550 pounds each. The OneWeb is a little smaller. Yet they think they could do it with a lot less satellites. They're not the only ones thinking about this. Jeff Bezos from Amazon has the Kuiper broadband network. They plan on launching thousands of satellites up as well. And I don't know if there's anybody else involved, but you know, that's at least three companies with a broadband satellite system that plan on starting operations. Well, at least two of them by the end of the year. I don't see how Amazon is going to be able to be successful this year. You know, they haven't launched that New Glenn rocket yet. New Glenn rocket, you know, another thing that looks like it's about the size of the Saturn V rocket, going to be launched from Launch Complex 36 in 2021. But, I mean, if they're going to wait that long, unless they're going to pay somebody else to launch their own satellites, which doesn't make sense, I don't think they're going to be a competitor for quite a few years. But SpaceX, I think, will be first, and they will probably be the ones to do it. And I think they'll start on a small scale at the end of the year with customers, commercial and even private customers. It's going to be interesting to see what they're going to charge. You know, you're going to need this antenna, size of a 18-inch, I guess it's going to be some kind of parabolic system. It looks like an enclosed system, like you're going to have a top and bottom. You know, it's going to be, you know, the weather's not going to be able to get at it. So it's probably just fiberglass type of cover that goes over it. I'll have to find out what this is. They just talked about it. I haven't really seen any pictures. They say it looks like a UFO, you know, a flying saucer from years ago. This is WS2N. Okay, let me just check here. I want to see if NASA is going to be launching that spacecraft at 11:03. I have their app program into my computer here. So let me bring that up. By now they should be transmitting. Let's see. I don't see anything on it yet, so I don't know. Right now they're talking about the possibly. This is WS2N.
WA2MHL. Name is Bob. I have a question.
WA2MHL. Hi, Bob. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I heard a story that Iran was going to put up some satellites. Do you have anything on that?
I read that they are going to be putting one up soon, but I don't have a date. They've done it before, years ago. And, they tried, I guess last year. They were loading tanks or something, and the whole thing blew up. They rebuilt their launch site, so my guess is probably within a month or so, they'll probably try it. Back to you, Bob.
That's all I have. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you. Thanks, Paul. Good night.
Very good. And it looks like NASA is on. Yeah. And apparently they do have a launch ready to go. Solar orbital will be launched at 11:03, according to this. So, they'll launch on a Atlas 411 rocket, which is
the first stage is a Russian RD-180. They've been very successful. It's like 100% launch with the Atlas V rocket. And they'll only have one booster attached to it, one side booster, and a solid booster. So if there's a problem, they have a two-hour launch window. They could, you know, they could drift to 12 or 1 o'clock. But from what I understand, there's no constraints. So it's pretty cool to watch these things. So if you bring up the NASA site, NASA.gov, and there'll be a link to actually watch the launch. Any comments or questions? This is WS2S. Okay, I really don't have anything else, but if anybody wants to turn that on, and let's see that launching. I guess 10 or 11 minutes from now, and hopefully that'll get to successfully start its flight to go into a heliocentric orbit around the sun. Any comments or questions? This is WS. We have a new way of doing things. We started this week. We'll finish at 11 o'clock. And we'll continue that that system into the near future. And the next time I'll be on the radio would be tomorrow. We have the club, Weimark Club of Information, and that comes on at 8:30. The Senate always comes on at 8 o'clock for that, and that comes on at 8:30 on both these repeaters. Let me see if Dick is there. K2RIW, this is WS2N. Okay, nothing heard. Roy, how you doing? AC2GS, this is WS2N.
Hello, Paul, this is AC2GS. I put up the links, and I'm also including a nice little image of a Morphodidius, a butterfly. Dick and I were talking about these butterflies that produce a very beautiful iridescent blue without the use of any dye or any pigment. It's purely nanoscale technology causing interference on an electromagnetic wave level. But it makes a darn pretty butterfly. So hopefully people will enjoy seeing that on my link page.
Yeah, I'll look for that. Yeah, I always look at whatever you put on there tomorrow morning. I'll look through that or in the afternoon. Very good. Yeah, and a good topic on all the LEDs. My phone is they call it a AMOLED. AM is for active matrix, organic light-emitting diode, but, you know, it's not a, 60-inch screen, it's just a phone, so, five and a half inches, diagonal, but, it's a beautiful picture, but they say the active matrix has to do with, like, each one has its own little capacity, each little pixel, and that's why it's so much better than the original OLEDs. They can control kind of like the brightness on it, each little pixel. But, you know, boy, you get some picture on these phones today. Back to you, Ryan.
Yeah, they have a lot of cell phones that use organic light-emitting diodes. My iPhone X is a organic light-emitting diode. I think the component is actually an active transistor, which allows them to put more current into each pixel and improve the speed and the magnitude of the signal. So that's very close to the old LCDs. When they first built LCDs, they were passive devices, and You still have it, I still have it, those old gray-green screens. The newer ones that have color filters have TFTs. They have transistors built into each pixel, which allows them to have enough power to block enough light to do color filtration correctly. They give you beautiful screens. I mean, I love my organic light emitting diode display, although it was amusing. I bumped into someone who didn't quite understand what he had bought and thought his LCD was an organic light emitting display. And he was very pleased with it, and I didn't know whether to tell him or not.
Okay, very good. Yeah, well, you can't beat the picture. Oh, well, on a phone, but then you don't have a backlight, you know. And I think Dick, when he bought his TV, I think he's got the LED backlights. That was always very confusing when that first came out. You know, everybody would say they had an LCD screen. Well, they did with the fluorescent lights. And they said, oh, we got the LEDs. Well, they weren't going to an LED, you know, pixel. They were still LCDs, but they were just going to LED lights. And I think that whole, you know, the way they advertised that was kind of confusing. Back to you, Roy.
You know, marketers will do what marketers will do. They'll market anything that they can grab onto. From earlier conversation I was having with Dick, it sounded as though his LCD was backlit by a fluorescent tube because he was noticing some deterioration in the signal that you don't usually find in the light-emitting diode backlight. Once upon a time, way, way back, there were these long cold cathode fluorescent tubes that were put on the top or the bottom. Like I mentioned, I had an old ThinkPad, IBM ThinkPad, where that tube went bad, and I actually disassembled the whole top with the display and peeled away the old cathode fluorescent tube, put a new one in, and surprise, surprise, it actually worked. So, you know, back in those days, we didn't know any better, so it was great. With light-emitting diode back displays these days, you can map different regions of the background. So if you have a bright object in one sector and a darker object in another sector, by selectively illuminating the backlight in the first place, you can actually improve the contrast ratio. And as time goes on, they're going to be used what's called mini-LEDs. Mini-LEDs means that the backlight will be, there'll be more of them, 500-600 sections, and they'll use smaller LEDs, and eventually they're hoping to design micro-LEDs that they'll slap right on the screen itself and do away with all that.
Okay, understood, yeah. Yeah, I took a big screen apart, and I knew it had something to do with power supply. We wound up taking it over to WA2CDL's house, and he looked at it. To get another power supply, by the time you do that, you know, you better put another TV. That's the way it's done today, you know. Anybody watching this launch, I got exactly 3 minutes to launch with this launch complex 41 in Florida.
The age of technicians, unfortunately, is fading from us. I had a flat plane television that failed under warranty, and the guy just came in, unscrewed the back, pulled out a very large circuit board module, replaced it with another very large circuit board module, screwed everything back in, and left. And it worked. But, you know, they don't look at separate components. They just grab these enormous modules, and they just throw them in the bin, I guess.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the way it went, right? We had discrete components, and then we went down to IC, so, you know, you wouldn't change out little resistors or transistors. You just change out the whole IC, and now we're changing out, you know, modules.
Well, okay, I'm going to turn it over to you, Roy. I'm going to watch this launch on the